This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
Hour number two of the Blitz starts now, live here on Fan Run Radio, AM 1340, FM 105.7. As always, go hit fanrunradio.com, hit the link at the top for the live stream. And if you got a Fan Run Radio app, hey, you can take that wherever you may go and hear our voices at any time. You can also see our smiling faces up on our Periscope feed, on our live Twitter feed, Facebook feeds this morning, bright and early. And now, without further ado, let's go ahead and take you to an opening drive. Let's hit the hottest headlines of the day, some we might have missed yesterday, and some Tennessee news as well. All right, Charlie, first down.
First down, the NFL is requesting proposals for future regular season games in Germany. Yesterday, they announced that they have officially launched the process to identify a partner city for said regular season games. The NFL's already staged 28 games in London since 2007. They're going to play two more at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in October. And right now they're trying to find what city matches their needs best. They've also played in Mexico and Canada, and they just keep trying to expand internationally.
What was surprising? No, go ahead.
The international series has become a highlight of the sporting calendar in the UK, with many trans fans already traveling from Germany to attend. So we're very excited about the development of our German fan base, and the time is right to identify a partner who can execute a game at NFL standards as part of our international growth strategy.
I like it. I was going to say it was surprising to me that there has been 28 games, but they've been doing this since 2007.
I didn't realize that either. Surprised me when I read it.
I was like, wow, they have done 28 games in London. I like it. The league has also said its weekly television viewership in Germany has grown by more than 20% annually since 2017. They set a record on German viewership of the Bucks and Chiefs Super Bowl this past February. I can attest from – I've been to Germany at least five times now.
Holy cow.
Yeah, my brother used to be stationed over in Germany. And
that's cool,
all over.
I want to go to Germany.
Yeah, all over different cities in Germany for quite some time. He only recently moved back in the last 6-7 years, so I got a chance to go to Germany a lot. And it is true. Like, there are a lot of NFL fans that I noticed. I mean, even at a young age when I went over there, my brother used to play semi-pro football on a Team USA team over there, and they used to travel. Like, the NFL fandom over there is pretty damn strong. Still a lot of Americans that live in Germany as well. That's because of the military. But they love the NFL. I like this a lot. I actually like that they want to play in Germany more so than playing in the damn UK. I'll tell you this. Like you said, you want to get to Germany. If they have some games in Germany where there's some actual reputable teams that maybe we like, I'd go over there with you. I still got some family over there. We could go do it. Have some free room and board. Germany's solid.
Does the Premier League ever play games in the U.S., like just regular season?
I think they've played some friendlies.
They haven't played
some exhibition
regular
matches.
Season games, but yeah,
they've played some exhibitions, though.
The MLS All-Stars and exhibitions and stuff like that.
They played some club teams.
I think they've
some
played
MLS.
Each other in an exhibition maybe once.
It's good because it's like the Premier League's not as popular over here, but then bringing teams over here is getting more fan engagement than with the NFL going more so into Europe. It's just a shame they usually send the worst teams over there because those teams don't want to give up a home game.
Yeah,
I have mixed feelings about the NFL playing in Europe because I enjoy it unless it's my team.
Yeah, when the Titans played.
If the Titans are playing in Europe, and again, as long as they're the road team, I guess like I'm still cool with it. You know, you wake up, watch a game at 9 a.m, like that's cool. But if the Titans ever lose a home game to Europe, I'll be absolutely livid. I'll be off the walls mad. And because of that, you know, I have to feel like other fan bases probably feel the same way. And that's why, you know, I have some mixed feelings about it. But when you get teams that aren't your own team, like I do enjoy being able to wake up at 9 a.m. and watching one extra football game instead of having to wait around watching NFL Live, NFL Game Day on NFL Network. I'd rather just watch two teams play, gamble on an extra game.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of the opposite there. I don't wake up early enough on Sundays because usually you got college football late the night before.
Yeah, I mean, usually, like, yeah, I'm watching Hawaii.
The Titans have the Titans played overseas?
They played one Europe game, but they were the road team. They played the Chargers. They lost on a 2-point conversion.
Yeah. I want to say, like, you talk about watching the games. I get up early, but I literally always forget when there's the London game going on. I think the only one I feel like that I've ever watched is when the Titans played over there. Yeah. The NFL has staged 5 preseason games in Germany in the past between 1990 and 1994.
Did not know that. Wow.
Yeah.
And, that's a weird one.
And the NFL had a professional team presence in Germany between 91 and 2007 with the Berlin Thunder, the Cologne Centurions, Frankfurt Galaxy, Hamburg Sea Devils, and Rhein Fire playing at various times in the former.
Rhein Fire, baby.
Yeah, they played at various times in the former World League, NFL Europe / NFL Europa. So, you might see more games in Germany.
It can give you a nice little fantasy advantage. You know, maybe you got to hope that whoever you're playing that week is out drinking, they forget to set their lineups early.
I've been there. I have done that. Charlie, let's go ahead and stay on the NFL. Second down.
Second down, there have been some rumors floating around that Deshaun Watson, his preferred landing spot is the Denver Broncos. The Texans just canceled their mini camps for the next 2 weeks. As do the 49ers. But, yeah, so the Texans, Deshaun Watson, he still wants out. There's still a lot of questions about what his eligibility is going to look like, how, you know, the investigation is going to play
assault allegations
with him. But he's focused on football still, and he wants to go be a part of the Broncos. And it feels like we were talking about this during the break. A lot of quarterbacks have targeted the Broncos. And, you know, we kind of disagreed, but the way I see it, you know, a lot of times people use, just a quarterback away in way too many situations. That's an entirely overused phrase, but I think it actually applies to the Denver Broncos. I think they have a very, very talented football team without a quarterback. You look at their receivers, Cortland Sutton, I think, is a very talented receiver. Yes, he's coming off an injury. And then you have Jerry Jeudy, who showed potential in his rookie season, but also had, you know, some drops here and there. And then Tim Patrick is as good of a wide receiver three as you can find almost anywhere in the league. Not to mention an offensive line that's pretty solid, and Noah Fant at tight end, who's one of the better young tight ends out there.
Yeah, that's what the thing I didn't understand.
Albert Obugawam as their backup tight end is pretty solid too. And their defense, when healthy, has consistently been one of the better in the league. I really think if they get a good quarterback in there, they're immediately one of the better teams in football.
Yeah, former teammate Kareem Jackson of Watson's, quote, he's the one who spoke on it on the podcast with Aqib Talib on his Catch and Fades podcast. I love that name. Quote, I've got a great relationship with Deshaun. I've been talking to him the last couple of weeks, man, and, like, all he's been telling me is, like, Jack, just tell him. Like, that's where I want to be. He's like, I want to be in Denver. So, I don't understand it. We were talking through the break. I don't understand what the big appeal was for everyone wanting to go to Denver. That was reports or, you know, kind of rumors of where Aaron Rodgers would also like to end up. I guess, like, what you say? I mean, if they're a quarterback away, these two talented quarterbacks could be the piece that sends them to the promised land. Why did the Houstons and the 49ers cancel their minicamps? Can anybody tell me that?
The Texans, I think they just said that they have accomplished everything they already needed to accomplish.
What?
So,
what?
What have you accomplished?
What?
The only thing the Texans have accomplished is signing the most possible guys that will be 70 overalls in Madden in one offseason in NFL history. Have you seen the free agents they've signed? There is a list. They've signed like 25, 30 guys this year, and I think all of them's Madden ratings fall in between like 68 and 72. They're trying to field the most average team in NFL history. And there's a reason that they're the favorite right now to have the worst record in the NFL per betting odds.
They're going to tank. The NFL is still conducting investigation into the lawsuits with Deshaun Watson. Watson scheduled to make $10.5 million in 2021 on the fifth-year option of his rookie contract. He got an extension in September of 2020, so that salary would jump to $35 million in 2022. Broncos, though, they got a pretty full quarterback room. They got Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Lock, Tyrod Taylor, and they took Davis Mills last season, correct?
The Texans took Davis Mills.
Oh, Houston. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. I read that wrong. Broncos have Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. Houston has Tyrod Taylor and Davis Mills. So
we'll see how that pans out.
I
haven't given up on Drew Lock yet either. Yeah, I think he's had some really unfortunate situations around him with some of the COVID and the injuries that he's had, the injuries to his receivers. I mean, the Broncos had to start a practice squad receiver at quarterback for a game last year. They've had a lot of extenuating circumstances hold them back, but I like their roster.
All right. Well, third down and news coming closer to home. We talked about the all-in campaign yesterday that Tennessee had announced. Well, renovations set to come to Neyland Stadium soon. That's right. Renovations, the first two projects addressing the 100-year-old stadium, are set to be completed before the start of the 2022 season. And as first-year athletic director Danny White revealed on Wednesday, you will see premium seating, lounge areas, party decks to give a more modern touch to the west and north sides of the stadium, and a second video board behind the north end zone. What do you guys think about renovations coming to Neyland and how that's going to play out? Are we for all this? The premium seating, that means more money. The lounge areas and party decks kind of sounds pretty cool. And then a second video board I do think is needed. Yeah. I would love to have that.
I really like the second video board. Other than that, I could care less about anything that they're doing.
Yeah.
The stadium's going to go under 100,000. Or it's going to be probably about 97,000 capacity after this.
That's the one thing that I don't like. I like keeping that number above 100,000, even though we aren't really filling them. It's just a pride thing, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, if the team was good, we'd have no problem filling them. That's the problem. Like, the way I see it is they're lowering the capacity because they can't fill it because the team has been so bad. And rather than make the team good, just lower the capacity so the stadium looks more full. The renovations are a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But certain aspects of it, I think they're going about it the wrong way.
I mean, I don't necessarily think they're trying to make it look more full. I think that they're reacting to lesser attendance and trying to make more money since they're not filling their seats.
But why aren't they filling the seats?
Because we haven't been good. But you can't just snap your fingers and make Tennessee good at football. We've been trying that for over a decade.
No, but you sure as hell can snap your fingers and make them bad.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah. All right. Fourth down. Let's go ahead and stay close to the hill. You know that football investigation by the NCAA? Well, there's an update on this. It's been 4 months removed from Jeremy Pruitt to the Josh Heupel era. And the Vols continue to wait on the conclusion of this internal and NCAA investigation. First-year athletic director Danny White, Dr. Danny, he provided an update on the situation yesterday afternoon. Here's what we have. Tennessee is still in constant contact with its outside counsel and the NCAA regarding alleged recruiting violations that occurred under Pruitt, the previous coaching staff. However, there is no timeline or when the case might conclude or move on to the next phase. If you have forgotten, which I don't know how you can, January 18th, Tennessee fired Pruitt, assistant coaches Shelton Felton and Brian Niedermeyer, and 7 support staffers, many of them in the recruiting office, for cause after an investigation in November turned up Level 1 and Level 2 NCAA rules violations. Firing Pruitt, Tennessee did not have to pay him the $12-plus million buyout he otherwise would have been owed. But Tennessee still is waiting on a decision. When do you guys think this might end?
It's never going to end.
I mean, I feel like the NCAA, when you get these kind of investigations, consistently takes a year, if not more. They don't do anything fast.
Yeah, Donnie Plowman, she had previously suggested unlikely that Tennessee would have a resolution on the NCAA case before the start of the 2021 season. And Danny White said Wednesday, quote, "We're working through that right now, working really closely still with our outside counsel and the NCAA staff. Having ongoing conversations with the NCAA staff, I think it's been very smart, and this decision was made before I arrived here, but we're certainly continuing to carry on with, again, I think it's very smart to include the NCAA every step of the way in our investigation with the goal of showing how serious we take this."
Does it make you mad seeing teams or schools like LSU just give the finger to the NCAA and get away scot-free, and then
I'm personally a fan of teams getting away scot-free. And I think it's necessary for the NCAA to pretend like they're going to investigate teams and pretend like they're going to punish them and then really not do much to them. And I think it's all kind of a facade intentionally so that the NCAA can continue to let these teams illegally pay players. And that way you don't have to make it legal, because once you make it legal, I mean, that changes college athletics probably for the worse. So let's just continue to let them pay them illegally and pretend to care about it.
I mean, the only reason we're under investigation right now is because the administration was too cheap to just fire Pruitt for being a bad football coach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is exactly what happened. Danny White went on to say, "We want to come out of this as an example of how NCAA issues should be solved in the future. We're going to operate with the highest level of integrity and hold ourselves accountable for the issues that did occur here." He also went on to say, "Are we closer than we were a month ago? Yes, but I can't put a time frame on it because I just don't know. These things are fluid. Each interview could yield different information that takes a different turn in the investigation." Ended it with, "Nobody can put a time frame on it right now." I did not know that, though. Tennessee included a clause in Heupel's contract that automatically adds an extra year to the deal if the Vols wind up with a postseason ban of 2 or more years or incur scholarship reductions of 8 or more scholarships as a result of this investigation.
That's fair.
I think it's fair, too.
That suggests a potential ramification. So I only get, you guys think it'll be a postseason ban for 2 years, 3 years?
No, two or three.
I think it'll be one. I think it'll just be a one-year bowl ban.
Maybe a one-year bowl ban, definitely a loss of scholarships for two to three years.
I think
a loss
of scholarship 2 to 3 years, and I also think a postseason ban for 2 years. I don't know if
it's
warranted.
A postseason ban for 2 years is almost unheard of.
I think they self-impose themselves for 1 year, and then the NCAA maybe gives them another
year.
See,
I think if they self-impose,
they won't get it.
Yeah, the NCAA won't get it.
A two-year bowl ban is unheard of.
That's what Ole Miss got for that whole ordeal with
Hugh
Freeze.
They got two years,
and that was a lot worse than what was going on here.
Mm. It takes something drastic to get 2 years, and the NCAA too, for monetary purposes, knows that they don't want to keep Tennessee out of a bowl game for 2 years because they're going to make so much money off of Tennessee fans traveling to watch their 7-win team play somewhere in Florida.
All right.
Against an average Big Ten team.
That was the opening drive for Thursday, June 10th. Keep it tuned right here on Fan Run Radio. Take a quick time out. Come back. Let's talk some Vols baseball. So, if you want to rewind and go back to what happened 10, 11 weeks ago, you know there's always a reason someone says something. That was Tony Vitello talking about Coach Maneri and his comments on the Tennessee Vols baseball atmosphere and the fans the last time LSU came to town. He went on to say you had a smaller crowd then, so you can hear the exact words people were saying with these smaller COVID crowds. He had a group of 5 or 6 guys that probably had some pops in them all over Trey Morgan at first base. Big time showdown Saturday. You a little bit more excited now?
I'm fired up, but I'm equally nervous. When you're the favorite, when you should win.
And then it's the old Cinderella story of Paul Maneri on his way out. They're playing for their coach, win one for the Gipper. How do we really expect this to go? Do we expect our Vols to sweep? I think we got the hottest team in baseball. I know the odds have improved for the baseball Vols. They have the second best odds now to win it all.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the book, too, they were always around second or third. But they have the second best odds now. Part of that has to do with playing LSU instead of, you know, Oregon in the Super. This LSU team, though, there is a lot of chippiness between these two teams. We saw that the last time, obviously. Trey Morgan, the first baseman for LSU, got harassed a lot. and the players exchanged a lot of words. A lot of that had to do with Blake Money, who is a young LSU player from Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. He was standing in the dugout chirping, like, I think after the game ended during that doubleheader.
He also has an older brother that plays baseball at a high level, Cash Money. I feel like, you know, knowing that his name's Cash tells you all you need to know about that family. I played against them in high school. You know, I understand why our team would chirp that guy.
Did he play?
I'll leave it at that.
Did he play in the Little League World Series? Because I seem to remember a screenshot of a little kid named Cash Money a few years ago.
And then they also played at Summit High School in Middle Tennessee, in Spring Hill. But yeah, I just from personal experience, I can tell you I understand why they would chirp a guy like him. But anyway, so Tennessee sweeps that series, obviously, and LSU was reeling at the time. They looked like a team that was – they were a team, really, that was on the outside looking in. Since then, they really went on a stretch in the second half where they weren't winning a ton of games, but they were winning more, and they were winning enough and playing better, and it was enough to get them into the field. Looking at their pitching staff, they – we're expecting a guy named A.J. Labas to be their ace, their Friday night starter, and he consistently just wasn't getting it done on Friday nights. He has an ERA at 5.42 right now, second on the team in strikeouts with 74. But then Landon Marceau, he stepped up for the Tigers and ended up taking over that Friday starter position, and he has been one of the best pitchers in the SEC. I mean, right up there with Sims at Mississippi State and Copps at Arkansas and some of these better starters. I mean, he's right up there. And he struck out 112 player batters this year, an ERA at 2.44, and 7 wins on the year. And that's going to be Tennessee's biggest obstacle to winning this Super Regional is Landon Marceau. When you look at that Friday night matchup with presumably Chad Dallas and Marceau, I got to think that the edge does go to Marceau, despite how good Dallas has been this year. Dallas did win more games, but Marceau has been better in other categories. And he has a chance to steal that game Friday and then put Tennessee in a position where they would have to – or excuse me, win that game Saturday and then put Tennessee in a position where they would have to win Sunday and Monday. And that's, I guess, my biggest fear. That's what makes me most anxious about this series is that Marceau goes out there and deals – but at the same time, you can still get to them, and LSU's pitching depth leaves a lot to be desired once you get past Marceau. Other than that, they're a very, very young team, and you know that's part. Maybe that's what you can, you know, kind of put some of these early season lumps on, the fact that they were so young, and that youth got better as the season progressed, and they kind of learned how to win a little bit. You know, they're a hot team. They went to that Eugene Regional and won 4 in a row after losing their first game. But, you know, they still didn't really look dominant in doing so. It took extra innings to beat Central Connecticut State. They lost their first game to Gonzaga. You know, and then they beat Gonzaga. Wasn't pretty, but they won. They dominated Oregon in the first game. I'll give them that. And then the second game that... you know, game 7 of the region final, I mean, they snuck out with a victory, but they were blessed with a lack of pitching depth from Oregon and a balk. Tennessee is better than this team. Trey Morgan, obviously, is a name that you need to know. He's a freshman.
First baseman, right?
First baseman. He hits in the top of their lineup. He really provides a lot of energy for that lineup. He hit .361 on the year. And he stole 15 bases as well. He's a guy that, you know, that hits to all fields, gets on base, and is aggressive once he gets on base. Other than that, Dylan Cruz and Gavin Dugas, both of them hitting over .300. Cruz at .361 and Dugas at .302. And both of them are seeing the ball really well. They were both really good in Eugene, and they both have a lot of pop. Dugas has hit 19 home runs on the year. That's towards the top.
And he hit 3 in the region.
In the country, yeah, and 3 of them in that Eugene regional. And we all know how small Lindsey Nelson plays once it gets hot out. So not a great matchup for Chad Dallas, who's a fly ball, you know, pitcher, a guy that is known to give up a home run or two. He's the kind of guy that will strike out 10 and give up 3 home runs and give up 3 runs in 7 innings. But Dugas is a guy that can take any pitcher we have yard. And then Dylan Cruz, he hit 16 home runs this season so far. And he's seeing the ball really well, too. Another really young guy, their young shortstop. LSU, though, the one thing, you know, I think their pitching depth falls off, like I mentioned. And then I think their batting depth falls off in the bottom of the order. And that's where Tennessee's biggest advantages are. You know, I think Tennessee has a better bullpen. You know, they have Camden Sewell, and LSU doesn't really have a player like that. And then Will Heflin and Blade Tidwell are both better than Lobis and whoever else LSU is going to end up throwing in their third game. The other advantage that you have is LSU is really good at the top of the lineup, but once you get down to 6, 7, 8, 9, they see a pretty significant drop-off, in my opinion, in just in talent and approach.
And I would say that's where we have an advantage. Yeah, I feel like that's exactly where Tennessee has another
another big advantage is that Tennessee can hit the damn ball at the bottom of the order. I mean, you have Connor Pavlone, who at coming into the season, Pavlone was, you know, an All-American, was seen as one of the best catchers in the country, preseason All-American for, you know, baseball. It was either D1 baseball or Baseball America. I mean, and when you can have the luxury of having a nine hole with a swing like Pavlone, and then, you know, you get guys like Pete Durkee down to the bottom, Drew Gilbert, you know, Evan Russell, who all aren't necessarily in your top, you know, three, four hitters. Tennessee up and down the lineup is much better than LSU, and their pitching depth is better. You're just going to have to find a way to get Landon Marceau to at least throw, if you're not going to score on him early, at least get him to work some counts and get that pitch count up and get to their bullpen. If you can win Saturday's game, then it would be miraculous for you not to reach a regional. But Saturday's game is going to be tough with Marceau. He's pitched really well lately. He pitched well in Eugene. And it's, you're going to have to figure out a way to get it done, whether that's winning those next two games or getting to Marceau.
We've talked a lot about you know, previewing our opponent. We're going to have Logan Quinton on the show tomorrow to break down some more of this super regional. But who has to show up for the baseball Vols? Who's a person that can't miss this weekend? I would, you know, I generally, yes, it's the entire team. But some of our X-Factor players, you guys give me a couple players off the top of your head.
For me, it's Liam Spence. We need him to be that force at the top of the lineup, the leadoff guy. He's been that for us pretty much all season. And then he went through that little bit of a slump heading into the SEC tournament. Seemed to kind of pick it up again right there towards the end. But, yeah, for me, it's Liam Spence. He's got to be the tone setter for this series.
I look at two names, both of them being pitchers. And I look at Chad Dallas, who needs to be better than he was against Wright State. If he has a similar performance to what he had against Wright State, it's going to be tough for Tennessee to win that first game. And they need him to step up and have one of his better performances. And he's more than capable of doing that, but he has got to keep the ball down against these LSU hitters. He cannot leave it up in the zone. You know, you can't leave a breaking ball out over the plate. Because, you know, especially at the top of their lineup, LSU will capitalize if you make a mistake pitch. If you leave one out, they will capitalize. They'll probably put it over the yard.
Does that scare you guys with Chad Dallas? And he's such a fly ball pitcher. That scares me. I mean, that's what I thought in the region. Like, oh man, I mean, that's how you got down.
I mean, it makes me anxious. But then the other guy I want to see step up is old Volley Fingers, Kirby.
Kirby Connell, he's got to be better.
Kirby Connell.
He had a rough region. He got pulled
early.
He's really
had a rough 3 weeks now, 3 to 4 weeks. And he was one of those guys that maybe you didn't expect him to be one of your best high-leverage relievers, and then he was that for the majority of the season. And down the stretch, teams kind of figured him out a little bit. He stopped throwing as many strikes, and he wasn't great in the SEC tournament. He had a brief appearance there, had a brief appearance in the regional, though there were a couple errors that plagued him too. You need him to be that high-leverage guy that he was for such a long stint in this season, because right now it can't just be Sean Hundley. You got to have McLaughlin step up. You got to have Redmond Walsh be at the top of his game, and you need Kirby McConnell, or Kirby Connell?
Yeah, Kirby Connell. He's got to show up. I would say my guys are I'm looking at the pitching staff. I believe we got to have a huge outing from one, the only Cheese Dallas, set the tone on Saturday. I presume he's going to be your guy you throw out there, unless you give us a Blake Tidwell. But they might save him for Sunday's game. But I'm going to say Cheese. And then I'm looking at Evan Russell. I thought he's played well, but
he's been kind of quiet lately.
He's been kind of quiet. I want Drew Gilbert to keep his pace. But Evan Russell, you've been kind of quiet, and he was kind of the cog turning the machine there for many SEC series down the stretch. I'd like to see him go off and get in his bag this weekend. But above all, yes, you need the entire team to show up. But those are two guys that I'll be looking at over this weekend. Exciting, man. Exciting time here on Rocky Top. The Super Regional starts Saturday night, 7 o'clock, Lindsey Nelson Stadium here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll have you previewed out the door tomorrow. It'll be an entire baseball show. I don't know how we're going to be able to contain our excitement. I know Charlie's going to come in very ramped up and just ready to go. Kind of wish the game was tomorrow in certain aspects. Kind of wish it's throwing me off a little bit that it's starting on Saturday. But, hey, it'd be like that sometime. That'd be the breaks. 865-546-8200 if you want to get on with us. On the other side, we're going to stick to baseball and talk a little MLB. A lot of controversy going on in the MLB right now. Listen to Chuck, Chance, and GP3, and this is The Blitz on Fan Run Radio.
She fill my mind up with ideas. I'm the highest in the room. Hope I make it out of here. She saw my eyes, she know I'm gone.
I see some things. Welcome back to The Blitz. About less than 20 minutes left here with you. I'm going to go ahead and jump over, stay on the diamond. Let's jump to the professional side, though. See Talk Sports Boys. They just walked in. They're ready to go. They're going to have you fired up from 12 to 3. But, Charlie, let's go ahead and go over to the diamond. A lot of controversy in the MLB we didn't get to yesterday, but seems that pitchers a little sneaky.
Well, there's just been this entire saga lately in MLB this season with substances, pitchers, balls.
And not PEDs
and,
for once.
And just a general distrust of the MLB. It started about 3 weeks ago. Giovanni Gallegos for the Cardinals had to change hats because they noticed his hat looked like it had stains and that they thought he was using substances. And then Mike Schilt.
Was he?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And then Schilt, his coach, then went on a 9-minute rant about substances and the ridiculousness of it and cracking down on it. And from there, it's led to the MLB, you know, starting to crack down. They announced suspensions will be levied for players caught using it. And since then, we've seen some pitchers have significant drops in their performance and spin rates. Pitchers that had, you know, been suspected potentially of using these substances.
Now, these foreign substances, it's been something that pitchers have kind of snuck and tried to sneak into the game for quite some time. This is not the
right.
I mean, going back years,
well,
talking about
the problem
suntan,
is not
lotion,
the substances.
Vaseline.
The problem's not the substances; it's the advancement of the substances.
Okay.
So, like, Bauer's spin rate dropped from significantly from his previous starts and his season average all the way down to 223 rotations per minute on his fastball.
That was last season?
No, like in his last start compared to his season average once the MLB
down.
Made the announcement. Garrett Cole, another guy consistently suspected, went from 2,561 to 2,436. Which,
how do we measure these spin rates?
TrackMan machines.
Okay.
They do it all.
Okay.
So then Garrett Cole was asked point blank if he had been using any sticky substances.
His answer was?
After stumbling on his words for about 10 seconds, Cole put together a statement which didn't really feel like a denial necessarily. He said, I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. There are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players, and I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. I've stood pretty firm in terms of that, in terms of the communication between our peers and whatnot. This is important to a lot of people who love the game, including players in this room, including fans, including teams. So if the MLB wants to legislate some more stuff, that's a conversation we can have, because ultimately we should all be pulling in the same direction on this.
Like I said, well, that's a conversation we can have if that's what they want to do. If they don't want to do it, you know,
well, that
cool.
is the issue, though. There are a lot of players that don't have an issue with substances. Players really, I mean, that's what the Cardinals coach even talked about. They prefer it. They would, when a guy's throwing 99 and when they're throwing the stuff that they are, they would prefer if they were using sunscreen or rosin or maybe even pine tar to have extra control on their pitches. The problem has been some of these new concoctions. They're using stuff that
Spider Tech. Tell me about Spider Tech.
Spider Tech. It's something that's used in powerlifting and CrossFit, I think, that gives you a better grip. Or people are just inventing combinations of substances, and they're going to their glove, and they're putting in their glove. And that's why, you know, you go look at Rob Friedman, Pitching Ninja, on Twitter, and you see some of these pitches that look like they defy the laws of physics. We're seeing more and more of that these days, and some of that does have to do, in my opinion, and I think, you know, decently agreed upon, with these substances that have gotten too far advanced. I mean, basically, just stick to your rosin and to your sunscreen. And that's kind of what Pete Alonso talked about too. You know, he went on, you know, talking about his distrust for the MLB, and he focused more on the baseballs. You know, he said he disagrees with the MLB's crackdown on pitcher-friendly foreign substances, and that the larger issue is the manipulation of baseballs depending on the free agent class, a theory that he presented as fact. He said the biggest concern is the MLB manipulates the baseballs year in and year out depending on the free agency class or guys being an advanced part of arbitration. He said in 2019 there was a huge class of free agent pitchers, and that's the quote-unquote the juice balls season, and then 2020 was a strange year of the COVID season, but now we're back to playing in a regular season, and there are about to be a ton of shortstops and position players are going to be paid a lot of money, and now the balls are dead this year. They're dead in the balls. So he thinks that's not a coincidence. The league did not comment. He did add in, though, on the substances specifically. He said, for me, whether they're using pine tar, rosin, sunscreen, bullfrog, or whatever they want to use to control that ball, let them, because for me, I go into the box and I see guys throwing harder every day. And I don't want 99 slipping out of someone's hand because they didn't have enough feel for it. Which also could relate to an incident with Mets outfielder Kevin Pillar getting hit by a 99-mile-an-hour fastball recently and breaking his nose. So just kind of a lot to unpack there. And
so
I think
Pete Alonso was saying that they're doing it, the MLB, is because of the free agent class, like because it's better. Or because it's worse. That's where I was confused. I was kind of confused.
So he's saying
that
when there's a big pitching class coming out, that's when the balls seem juiced.
Okay.
And when now that there's a big crop of position players coming out, that's when it feels like they've deadened the balls. And then there are
is that because
they
want those big time players to stay in their markets?
It's because they want them to get paid less.
To get paid less. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So they don't make as much money. Okay. That makes now I'm understanding. Okay. It was very tough for me to follow that.
And I mean, you know, I don't know if you can just straight up say that as fact, but you know, I think there certainly could be some truth to it.
Some truth lies in the middle, somewhere in the middle there.
There's some numbers that back it up. The percentage of home runs is down this year by like 0.5%.
Yeah, it was a surge last.
Doesn't sound like a lot, but it's significant. You know, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I think last year that was only a 60-game season, and there are quite a few players who had over 20 home runs. And now this season we're 60 games in, and Acuna and Vlad Guerrero Jr. are leading the league with only 18.
Yeah.
So you can see that drop right there.
Significant drop. Well, that'll be something that we'll monitor here on out. There is our MLB update. We hadn't done that in a while. It's crazy stuff going on the diamond for the professional guys. So we'll continue to see how that goes the rest of the season. Garrett Cole has his first start since that I guess, those post-game comments when he was asked that. He has his first start tonight, so we'll see how his rotation looks tonight. All right, last segment coming up on the other side, which, if you haven't heard, in the National Calendar Days. This is The Blitz on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back to The Blitz, final segment. Talk Sports in the building. They're ready to go. Hey, it's been a great show. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us. As I said, tomorrow we will, let me make sure, tomorrow we will have Logan Quinton. That's right. I just got the comunicado. I just kind of put my chips in. I was hoping that he was going to be here. But we will have him tomorrow at 11:20. He'll preview the Super Regional with us going into the weekend. We love having Logan on. You can find all his excellent work over at fanrunradio.com or follow him at LDQ Sports on Twitter. Now, with a couple minutes left to go in the show, it's time to hit you with a little If You Haven't Heard. Charlie?
Hey, y'all, if you haven't heard, Tennessee basketball, they're back on campus. They're together, and they are practicing. However, they are a couple players shy of their roster. One of those players being Santiago Viscovi. He is one of 16 players trying to earn a spot on Uruguay's 12-man Olympic qualifying roster this summer. The team begins practice June 14th and will cut that roster from 16 to 12 players before the qualifying games ahead of the Tokyo Olympics. They qualify through a FIBA tournament scheduled from June 29th to July 4th. It's going to be tough for them to qualify, but maybe not so tough for Viscovi to make the team. He just has to be better than four people. I think that's certainly doable, and it could be pretty cool if we get to see Viscovi, you know, in the Olympics, or at least competing for the Olympics. Also, Kennedy Chandler, he has accepted an invitation to participate in the 2021 USA Men's Basketball U19 World Cup Team training camp, June 28th through 22nd. So those two guys out there playing for their country, but the rest of the guys on campus, they're getting to work.
Yeah, Chandler playing for the under 19 team. Like you say, Viscovi getting the opportunity to play for his Uruguay national team. Love to see it. Love to hear great things about the basketball Vols. If you haven't heard, speaking of baseball, we were talking about that earlier in college baseball. There was a lot of uncertainty before Tennessee announced that they were going to do everything they could to lock up Tony V. Texas A&M, they hired somebody, and now it looks like LSU's search may have reportedly be close to an end. College baseball insider Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball is reporting that former Oregon State baseball coach Pat Casey is now the top candidate for the LSU Tigers. Rogers' report indicates a hire could be as close as this week. More to be coming to you very soon. Maneri announced in May that he would be retiring when LSU's 2021 campaign ended. And it had been rumored that their top candidate was Florida's coach, Kevin O'Sullivan, along with they were wanting to reach out to Tony V until that news came out and Tennessee squashed that like a jelly bean. But looks like they may have found a guy in Paul Casey. Casey coached college baseball from 88 to 2018 at George Fox and Oregon State. This reads very funny. During his tenure, though, Oregon State won the College World Series three times, 2006, 2007, and in 2018. He received National Coach of the Year honors in 2006 and 2017. He is 1,071 and 571 as a head coach. So pretty strong resume.
A&M hires TCU's Schlossingle.
Yep.
And now LSU has a clear front runner. So got to feel pretty safe about Tony V.
Yep.
But now you look at it from the flip side. Shoot, two schools just probably got a whole lot better with two really good hires.
They likely did because definitely LSU was on the downtrend. It looks like they bring in some new blood.
And with a young team, great coach. If you haven't heard, season two of Outer Banks.
What?
There's a official trailer and a premiere date. Season 2 drops July 30th on Netflix. So we are close.
July when?
July 30th on Netflix.
Oh, my God.
It also dropped a they're calling it an official teaser instead of a trailer. I don't think there's enough in there to be a trailer, but we're getting there. Our favorite
John B.
Our favorite trashy but also really good TV show.
John B.
It's coming back.
Sarah Cameron. JJ.
Rumors that Addison,
Kiara.
Rumors Addison Rae is in this season.
I love that show. Even all they do
is
they run around.
So poorly written.
Pogues.
Such a good story.
Pogues, baby. Pogues are back. I love that show. Not going to lie. It's one of my biggest guilty pleasures of quarantine. I binged through that. I thought it was excellent. All right. Hey, great show. Like I said, Talk Sports ready to go for Charlie. For GP3, I am Chance Collins. National Day calendar on the way out. National Black Cow Day.
Yes.
National Iced Tea Day. Go get you some iced tea.
I thought we were talking about iced tea like iced tea.
Nah, like McDonald's sweet tea. Dollar. National Ballpoint Pen Day. I love a good ballpoint pen. National Egg Roll Day.
Gross.
And National Herbs and Spices. Always salt your food, kids. Hey, great show. We'll catch you tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in for the Blitz. Stay tuned into Fan Run Radio.